Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 10th, 2019. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur Leadership, Council Hires Manager. I'm hoping and praying that he picks up the mantle of neighborhood revitalization. Hopefully, he'll understand the real necessity of getting on it. That's important. Sue Lawson, past president, Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations. He knows the Illinois debacle, which is a big deal for Decatur because state funding has really been cut over the past few years. I do think those are two advantages he'll have coming in. Jerry Dawson, former city councilman and sheriff. I just hope that he'll learn all aspects of our community and learn about all the people that live herein. It's important to know the culture and know the people of the community. Janelle Norman, President, NAACP, Decatur Branch. It's great to have someone that's got local knowledge, and I trust the City Council. I think they know their number one responsibility is finding the right person, and the people I know on the City Council take it very seriously. Kevin Breheny, past President, J.L. Hubbard Insurance. Scott Wrighton says he can help take city in new directions, by Tom Lisi. Decatur. The Decatur City Council's choice for the next city manager says he can be a change agent for the community and provide outside-the-box thinking to help find solutions for the city once he takes the helm in the coming months. If you're looking for someone who can just mind the store and make sure the bills get paid, then hire somebody else, said Scott Wrighton, who Mayor Julie Moore Wolf introduced Wednesday as the next city manager for Decatur, pending council approval next week. Because helping the governing body make some fundamentally different directional changes, policy changes, is what I can hopefully help them to do and bring together different elements in the community. The pick comes almost 7 months after former city manager Tim Gleason announced he would be leaving the position to take up the same role for the city of Bloomington. A special meeting for the council to approve the hire is scheduled for Monday. And Wrighton's proposed contract will be made public on Thursday, the mayor said. Officials have not yet determined Wrighton's starting date, though it will likely be somewhere near late March, Wrighton said. Over the summer, the city council hired the Northbrook-based consulting firm GovHR USA to conduct a national search to fill the position, in a contract not to exceed $18,500. Early in the process, officials provided a public comments portal on the municipal website for residents to give their input. In meetings closed to the public, the council conducted the candidate interviews at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel in December after meeting with the recruiting consultant from GovHR USA, former Bloomington City Manager Mark Peterson, to narrow their search the month before. Wrighton's salary will become public Thursday, when city officials release his contract ahead of next week's vote. Wrighton, who said he was born in 1957 in Chicago, but would not give his exact age, graduated from Rocky Mountain High School in Fort Collins, Colorado, before moving on to Sterling College in Kansas. He later earned a master's degree in public administration from the University of Kansas. He became village administrator of Mount Zion when he was 26. It was a long time ago, but it was a good learning experience, Wrighton said. Wrighton said he's been described as a change agent in the past and hopes to be the same in his position. We can't wait for him to actually get here and start, Moore Wolf said. We really want someone to move this community forward, and we think Wrighton is the kind of leader to make that happen. Wrighton said Wednesday he was excited to help with finding new solutions to challenges facing Decatur. Cities all across America are struggling with the fact that they can't be what they might have been at the zenith of their economic success in the 20th century, he said. Successful cities have to remake themselves, sometimes in very structural and fundamentally different ways in the 21st century. So I look forward to working with this governing body and a very talented staff that's been here in Decatur to figure out what some of those things might be going forward. Wrighton has been city manager in Streator for more than 4 years, and also was city manager there from 1987 to 1994. Wrighton also was the city manager of Kirksville, Missouri for 9 years. on the faculty of the University of Georgia's Carl Vinson Institute of Government for 6 years, and as the city manager of a private new urbanism development project in India for 5 years. The news also comes on the heels of the announcement Monday that interim city manager Bill Tyus will be leaving for the deputy city manager in Bloomington, beginning February 7th. He will be in the same position under his former boss, Gleason. Streeter, a city of about 13,000 people in LaSalle County, has been working through similar challenges as Decatur, something Wrighton said he thinks will help him in his new role here. The Decatur position seemed like the right alignment of skills and backgrounds, and it was an opportunity for me to do some of those things on a larger canvas than the community that I currently serve, he said. Streeter Mayor Jimmy Lansford said Wrighton will be an asset for Decatur. I hate to see him go, but I also know professionally when these opportunities come around, you have to make those decisions, he said. Wrighton said it would take time to learn the community and come up with a strategic plan on what policies the City Council will pursue this year. It's not my agenda, it's the City Council's agenda, and there's going to be some learning curve that I have to get over before we can articulate that to a larger community, he said. One priority of the City Council that he said he was aware of was its neighborhood revitalization project, first launched in the fall 2017, with a wide-ranging effort to gather community feedback. Tyus, in June, presented a number of proposals to the council related to improving not just appearance and value of properties, but also quality of life and the area's economic health. Progress has slowed in recent months as Tyus has filled the interim manager position and the council searched for Gleason's replacement. I can certainly confirm neighborhood redevelopment is a priority, Wrighton said. How those objectives are achieved, given the limited financial resources of the city, is part of the interim process we'll work together on. Contact Tom Lisi at 217-421-6949. Follow him on Twitter, at Tommy Lisi. Wrighton lauded for his drive, by Tom Lisi. Decatur. Scott Wrighton is leaving a small LaSalle County city nearly transformed from when he arrived for his second stint as city manager there, business leaders and local officials say. What happened here in the last 4 or 5 years is remarkable, said Steve Broudis, owner of fuel supplying business in Streeter, where Wrighton has served as city manager since 2014. A lot of it had to do with just an attitude change and getting people involved, and Scott was able to do that. I think that was very important. In 1987, Wrighton was hired as Streeter's first city manager, after voters decided to change its form of government by referendum. He left in 1994, serving for 9 years as city manager in Kirksville, Missouri, and later joined the faculty of the University of Georgia's Carl Vinson Institute of Government. Before coming back to Illinois, he spent 5 years as a city manager for a privately planned city in India called Lavasa. Streeter is about 80 miles southwest of Chicago and has a population of about 13,000. Area leaders pointed to a revitalization of a shopping center, new national chains in the area like Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins, and grants that refurbished downtown storefronts as recent successes under Wrighton's stewardship. We're seeing things we haven't seen here for years, Broudis said. Wrighton also helped Streeter shore up its finances by finding new revenue sources and moving municipal work done by full-time employees to private contractors and part-time employees who are not eligible for public pension benefits. You can't keep hiring new employees to do things you'd like to do because of pensions, essentially, said Streeter City Councilman Ed Brozak. He also worked to draw in a flurry of solar and wind farms in the area as a way to generate new tax revenues. Streeter's probably got more wind farms around and solar farms around than anywhere in Illinois, and that's all Scott's doing, Broudis said. The success has not come without hard decisions and criticism. Wrighton met strong resistance from Streeter's local police and fire unions when the city tried to negotiate new contracts that would allow, among other changes to worker benefits, part-time officers to work hours if no full-time employee of the force was available. an arbitrator through the Illinois Labor Relations Board ruled against the city's proposal and in favor of the police union's proposal. At the end of the day, on multiple occasions, we just had to move on to these next processes of these disagreements, said Kurt Snow, president of the Streeter Firefighters Union Local 56, which has now moved into further legal proceedings to settle similar disputes, including the use of part-time workers. He's a very smart guy. He's kept us on our toes, I can tell you that much. Others in Streeter noted Wrighton's intelligence and a drive for results. I think Scott's a bulldog, said Jack Zuris, executive director of the Streeter Area Chamber of Commerce. When he gets something in mind to get done, he sees it through. One reason the new city manager in waiting won over the Decatur Council was his eclectic resume in academia and other parts of the world. I think that the different experiences that the city council saw in my background are ones that enable me to bring a wider range of options to accomplish the council's agenda, Scott Wrighton said at a press conference in the city council chambers inside the Decatur Civic Center Wednesday, some of which are creative and outside the box, but all within the context of the direction the city council sets. Contact Tim Lisi at 217-421-6949. Follow him on Twitter, at Tommy Lisi. Illinois government. New faces, pledges kick off session. Madigan, Cullerton retain leadership posts. By Sarah Burnett, Associated Press, Springfield. A new Illinois legislative session got underway Wednesday, with Democrats firmly in control, but both parties pledging to turn the page on years of budget stalemates, government dysfunction, and name-calling. Democrat Michael Madigan, already the longest-serving state House Speaker in U.S. history, was easily elected to his 19th term. Other leaders, Senate President John Cullerton and GOP leaders Jim Durkin and Senator Bill Brady, also were reelected. The lone new face from the Decatur area in the State House will be Dan Calkins, Republican of Decatur, who defeated Democrat Jen McMillan in last November's election. Calkins will represent the 101st House District, an area that had been represented for nearly two decades by Bill Mitchell, a Republican from Forsyth who did not seek reelection. State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, and State Representative Sue Scherer, Democrat of Decatur, returned to Springfield after winning re-election last year. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, and State Representative Brad Hallbrook, Republican of Shelbyville, will also represent the Central Illinois area after running unopposed in last year's election. It's a new day in Springfield with fresh faces and new ideas after 4 years of partisan gridlock, Menar said in a news release. I plan to continue pressing for fair school funding and desperately needed job creation in central Illinois and protections for rural health care. And I intend to continue reaching across the aisle to my Republican colleagues so we can make good things happen for downstate residents together. It was Madigan who was the target of most of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's attacks during a years-long state budget impasse that saw Illinois go deeper into debt and prompted huge cuts to higher education, social services, and other areas. Madigan and other leaders noted Illinois still faces big challenges, from an imbalanced state budget to crumbling infrastructure. To solve these problems, we need people to work with people, Madigan said during a House inauguration ceremony in Springfield. Democrats picked up seats in both chambers in the November election, when Democratic billionaire J.B. Pritzker also unseated Rauner for the governor's office. The 101st General Assembly has the largest percentage of Democratic lawmakers of any Illinois legislature in more than five decades. Democrats now have a 74-44 majority in the House and a 40-19 edge in the Senate. Rauner presided over the swearing-in of the new Senate in one of his last official acts before he leaves office, and Pritzker is inaugurated on Monday. He congratulated lawmakers and wished them well. Cullerton, who was elected to his sixth term as president, thanked Rauner while acknowledging the two had our differences. You took on a challenge when others merely complained from the sidelines, he said. Among the highlights of Senate Inauguration Day was Cullerton's spotlight on a workforce training program through Richland Community College in Decatur. Courtney Carson, who oversees the program, and Chris Valdez, president of the college, were guests of Menar and the Senate president during the inauguration. The program, which received a $1.5 million state grant in 2018, aims to give workers specific skills needed by employers, but also the basic essential skills that workers need to get their foot in the door at good-paying jobs. Things like punctuality, appropriate attire for interviews, and professional behavior in the workplace. The program is a partnership among the community college, employers, and local and state officials. It is projected to result in 225 new jobs in Decatur. Cullerton called for replicating the program throughout Illinois. Before the new Senate was sworn in, the previous Senate voted 33-21 to give approval to a measure to raise salaries by 15% for agency directors and assistant directors. Pritzker requested the increase, saying it was necessary to bring in top talent. Durkin noted the bipartisan support for that measure, and another to replace the Illinois Tollway Board because of questionable spending and contracting. As a sign, Republicans are ready to work with their Democratic colleagues. Tot's death draws 4 years. Decatur father sentenced in crash that killed daughter. By Tony Reed. Decatur. Matthew D. Jackson, the Decatur father who was driving under the influence of alcohol in the car crash that caused the death of his 17-month-old daughter, was sentenced to 4 years in prison Wednesday. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Griffith earlier listened to a long, emotional statement of regret and apology from the 32-year-old Jackson, who said no court punishment could be worse than waking up every day to the knowledge that he had destroyed his daughter's life. But Jackson, who has other children and was backed up by a gallery of weeping family supporters, including the mother of his daughter, begged the court for a non-custodial sentence so he could continue to support his family. "The only thing that keeps me going is my own kids and my nieces and nephews," added Jackson, struggling to get the words out between sobs. Speaking of his late daughter, he also told the judge, "If there was any way I could trade my life for hers, I would do it. No questions asked." Jackson pleaded guilty at an October 31st court hearing to a single charge of aggravated DUI causing death in a plea deal that capped the prison sentence he received at a 12-year maximum. The fatal accident happened about 12:20 a.m. May 15, 2017, when Decatur police said the car Jackson was driving crossed the center line and collided head-on with a pickup truck in the 2600 block of East Lost Bridge Road. Ava Marie Talaferro Jackson was a backseat passenger and suffered fatal head injuries. Jackson, already under court supervision for a DUI conviction from 2016, had been tested and found to have a blood alcohol level of 0.265%, more than 3 times the limit for driving. Presenting the prosecution case at Wednesday's sentencing, State's Attorney Jay Scott had reminded the court of Jackson's high alcohol level and his prior DUI record. He also pointed to witness evidence that showed Jackson, even though he was sitting in the car with broken leg bones, reached out to throw an empty vodka bottle under the car after the crash, as if to hide it. Scott called for Jackson to be sentenced to a maximum 12 years allowed under the plea deal. Defending, attorney Hallie M. Besner cited her client's contrition and the fact he had sought treatment for substance abuse, having acknowledged he was an alcoholic. Calling for a restricted custodial sentence where Jackson might spend weekends locked up in the county jail, Besner argued a full-blown prison sentence would inflict hardship on Jackson's family and wasn't needed as a corrective punishment. "I think the worst thing possibly that could happen to a parent has happened to Mr. Jackson. There is no punishment worse than losing your own child," said Besner. "I think any sentence of imprisonment will simply compound a horribly tragic situation and make it worse." Griffith said he believed the sincerity of Jackson's regret and said it pained me to have to sentence him to prison, but told him that anything less than prison would deprecate the seriousness of the defendant's conduct. In addition to the 4-year prison term, which must be served at 85%, Griffith ordered Jackson to pay a $750 DUI fine and a $100 trauma center fee. Contact Tony Reed at 217-421-7977. Follow him on Twitter at Tony J. Reed. Alexander Lumber in Lincoln, Taylorville to close, by Kevin Barlow, Lincoln. Alexander Lumber store manager Nick Black confirmed Tuesday the store in Lincoln will shut down by the end of February. "It's true and we are disappointed," he told the Pantograph on Wednesday. The store, located at 910 Woodlawn Road, has four other employees besides Black, who confirmed a liquidation sale would begin in a few weeks. A final closing date has not yet been set, but Black said it would likely be by the end of February. "I have an idea, but I have to talk with our district manager more first," he said. The store offers cabinet design, millwork, and building materials. The Alexander Lumber in Bloomington will be merging into the company's facility in Leroy. Calls to the Bloomington and Leroy locations were referred to company headquarters that did not respond to a request for comment. Liquidation sales will also begin in the Bloomington location next month. The Leroy store is located at 208 West Cherry Street. Alexander operations in Canton, Monmouth, Rushville, and Taylorville also are closing. The company will also merge its Gilman location into its Watseka and Fairbury locations to serve Iroquois and Livingston counties and nearby Kankakee. "This is not a decision we make lightly," said Watt Alexander, chairman of Alexander Lumber's board of directors, in a statement. "As a family, we take great pride in the legacy of our lumber company, and we value the employees who work for us. After a comprehensive strategic review of our business, we've decided to double down on specific markets we believe offer the strongest opportunity for future growth in a difficult fiscal and economic environment." The company was founded in 1891 by John Alexander in Wisconsin. There are currently a total of 18 retail yards under the Alexander Lumber umbrella, including 15 in Illinois, 2 in Wisconsin, and 1 in Iowa. Several businesses in Lincoln closed in 2018, including the town's only Kroger store. Contact Kevin Barlow at 309-820-3238. Follow him on Twitter at PG_Barlow. On board for bus safety, Argenta Oriana teams with police to stop dangerous drivers, by Jalen Cook, Argenta. It's not every day when Argenta Oriana school superintendent Damian Jones rides the bus with his students. In fact, it's been over 30 years since he'd ridden a full bus route. But on Wednesday afternoon, Jones sat up front on a bus packed with Argenta Oriana elementary school students to help oversee a joint effort between the school district and Illinois State Police to reduce the number of area drivers that illegally pass stopped school buses. "We take student safety very seriously," Jones said. "The scariest thing that could ever happen is that a student gets hurt. Unfortunately, we have people that blow through school bus stop arms." Three state troopers followed three buses as they drove along their respective routes after school Wednesday. When a motorist ignored a bus's stop arm, which is a violation of state law, he or she would be pulled over and given a citation. Illinois law states that anyone who is convicted of passing a stopped school bus will have their license suspended for 3 months on a first offense and will pay a $150 fine. Jones said the enforcement measures were taken during the morning bus routes and in the afternoon routes. The Macon County Sheriff's Office also participated in the morning shift, he said, and no drivers were caught in violation of the law. However, Jones said three drivers were pulled over in the afternoon. One of the violations occurred outside the bus that the superintendent rode. "There is nothing so important that you need to rush through a stop arm and potentially risk a child's health," Jones said. The National Association of State Directors of Pupil Transportation Services said that while school buses are the safest way to bring students to and from school, drivers who ignore activated bus stop arms remains a troubling issue. In 2018, the organization released the findings of a 38-state survey that asked bus drivers to report motorists who illegally passed stopped school buses. The survey said 106,306 of participating drivers reported 83,944 vehicles ignored stop arms on a single day during the 2017-2018 school year. However, the NASDPT said the number of total violations was likely much higher, since not every state participated in the voluntary survey. Jones said curbing the issue of stop arm violations has been a priority for the school district, especially in the aftermath of an October 2018 incident in which three Indiana children were killed after being struck by a vehicle while crossing the street to board a bus. A fourth child was critically injured in that crash. "Obviously, we're a small community," said Master Sergeant Todd Armstrong, a state police trooper and president of Argenta Oriana School Board. "I hear from bus drivers, their friends, and Mr. Mark Daly, as well of their concerns of vehicles who are ignoring their stop arm." Armstrong said he, Jones, and Daly, the school district's transportation manager, spent time working to coordinate a date for when they could schedule the enforcement activities. Before that, Jones said Daly had also approached him about the possibility of installing new equipment to assist in safety efforts. As a result, some of the district's newer buses were outfitted with additional rear stop arms and cameras that can record the license plates of drivers who ignore the stop arms. "The bus driver fills out a form where the violation occurred," he said, "and the form, along with the video, are turned into the police department." Those cameras were installed at the beginning of the 2018-2019 school year. Daly said that at the end of the first semester, 38 stop arm violations were recorded within the school district. Looking to the future, Jones said the district's goal is to implement an awareness campaign to better protect its base of over 900 students. "The students who take the bus are in a vulnerable situation," he said, "and it would be ideal if the district never had to report a stop arm violation again." Daly agrees, "Use extra caution when you're around a school bus, and certainly stop if the stop arms are deployed," he said. "It's all about keeping kids safe." Contact Jalen Cook at 217-421-7980. Follow him on Twitter at Jalen_HR. Second fire at apartment reported, Decatur. The Decatur Fire Department responded to a fire Wednesday morning, a little more than 24 hours after a previous call at the same apartment. The second fire at 1760 South Fairview Avenue was reported at 1:17 a.m. Wednesday. The female tenant was able to return to the apartment after the fire at 11:06 p.m. Monday. The causes of the fires are under investigation, Fire Inspector Mike Wigington said. The first fire was extinguished near a bedroom door, Wigington said, and the second fire began in the living room with a pile of clothing and other items. After the second fire, the tenant was taken by ambulance to a local hospital for evaluation, Wigington said. The same two neighbors who helped put out the original fire were again able to extinguish the second fire before the fire department arrived, Wigington said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, January 10th, 2019. Please stay tuned.